You're listening to the TrekMate Family Network.
The Battle Bridge is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com.
Worf, Solus, Sue, report to the Battle Bridge. I'll join you in a moment.
Ensign, secure connector levels.
Crusher, Carteno, Gleason, report to the Battle Bridge.
Mr. Data, Mr. Worf, I have a special mission for you.
Note in ship's log that at this start time, I'm transferring command to the Battle Bridge.
They have a new Wi-Fi router. That's what's going on.
Router.
Yep.
R-O-O-T-E-R. Router.
Yep. The thing that roots. It roots things. It's a router.
Okay.
I swear we had this conversation last time.
We always do.
Yeah, possibly.
Whenever he uses those improper words, I just have to call him out on it.
It's not an improper word. By the way, so Lou, what is Dead Man's Party? What's that?
Oingo Boingo.
I have no idea what that means.
You've never heard
yet.
Of... Hold on. Here. I was hooked by lightning, walking down the street. I was hit by something last night in my sleep. It's a dead man's party. Who could ask for more? Everybody's coming. Leave your body at the door. Leave your body and soul at the door.
You're listening to The Battle Bridge, a TNG podcast where we discuss everything about Star Trek The Next Generation. Tonight's episode is The Outcast. I'm Matt from Tennessee.
And I'm James from London.
And I'm Lou from Nebraska. Matt from Tennessee. Boy, it feels like you've been on just recently, haven't you?
But it's, a lot's happened since then, though.
Definitely has, hasn't it? Let's see. First we had... Let's see, where were you at? Power play. What do you mean a lot's happened in a couple weeks? Well, then again, for us it's
been... we've got...
How long has it been for us in linear time?
Well, as we're recording, we've got a lot more Trek than we used to have.
Yes. We did that thing, the Discovery?
I think that's what it's called.
Discovery.
We've also had more of the Orville.
The Orville. Okay.
The other Star Trek show that's on.
Yeah, the Star Trek spoof. And, James, have we ever talked about Star Trek, the last movie? What's it called? I'm drawing a blank.
Beyond.
Have we ever talked about Beyond?
No. We've never spoken about Beyond. And in fact, you know, as you'll remember, we saw. I've only seen Beyond once, and this is actually a terrible story for me to say, but because it's not, there's not, I don't have a huge amount of Trek cred here. I mean, having said that, right, I saw Beyond whilst having to fly either to Las Vegas to go to the 50th anniversary convention. So yeah. I think there's a little bit of Trek cred. But Lou, and you know, you remember we met up. We saw Beyond the cinema in Vegas. And I think we had a bit of a chat about it, but I don't think we ever spoke about it publicly because it was right at the beginning of the Star Trek Las Vegas convention. I then didn't get to see it again in cinema when I came back to the UK. For whatever reason. And I do have it on my shelf. I ordered it on Blu-ray when it was released. It's still in St. Kling film, and it's not opened yet. A couple of weeks ago, I did say to the wife that we should sit down and we should watch it. And she was nearly up for it until she saw some kind of art house French cinema thing also on the shelf, and we ended up watching that. I've only seen it once, and it was with you.
Well, it's a little strange because I must have been in awe of the being in your presence because I just saw it again recently.
Yeah.
I just saw it again recently, and I thought, why haven't I seen this movie yet? But yet, some parts were kind of familiar, but a great deal of it wasn't. And I remembered that eventually that you and I actually did go and see it in Las Vegas, but for some reason...
We did?
Yeah. But for some reason, I guess, it was, 2.5 months after I got laid off. I just was like, why haven't I seen this movie yet? And it just, I couldn't understand why. But, and I remembered we actually did in Las Vegas, right there at the cannery.
That's right.
Yep. It was a pretty cool hotel. I actually had a movie theater right inside there. It was impressive. And it was cheap, too. So.
I have to say, in the UK, I mean, given a bit of a real world, in the UK, we're about to come up to half term, which is when the kids break for a week in between, the beginning of school and Christmas. I'm actually taking the wife. We're disappearing for a couple of days. The kids stand with the mother-in-law's coming over to look after them, and we're disappearing. And I was booking a hotel today, and I can absolutely guarantee you that, yes, the place we stayed in Vegas is dirt cheap.
It was.
Dirt cheap, at least compared to London. And I accept that that's like a very unusual yardstick on which you should be able to measure anything out in the middle of the desert in Nevada. But yeah, compared to what I'm having to fork out here, it's dirt cheap.
Hmm. Yeah. It was pretty good. The only thing I didn't like was the Uber rides back and forth every day. But beyond that, it was still cheaper that way than it was to stay at the Rio, especially. So, hey, let's throw a shout out. Did you see that? I had his name right there with Robert Hayes. Did you see he started up his Promenade podcast?
Do you have the correct surname there?
Ray. Oh, I'm sorry. Robert Hayes. Robert. You know who Robert Hayes is? No.
I do not know who Robert Hayes is. I think you're referring to Robert Reyes, who we met in Vegas.
Yes.
Hang on, did you meet?
Yes.
Oh, no. Yeah, we both met, but I was the only one that went bowling with him.
Yeah, yes. Robert Hayes. I'm sorry, Robert, because I know you listened. You know I'm embarrassed. He's the guy that played Ted Stryker on Airplane. I just confirmed that. Robert Reyes, he started his Promenade podcast, and he's got two of them so far, but they're interviews that he did this year at Star Trek Las Vegas. So if we couldn't be there, at least we can hear some of it.
Well, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. So good job, Robert. I'm gonna find it again, and I'm going to put a link if I can remember to. Because, when I post this, it could be 2-3 weeks from now. So.
The temporal mechanics and all.
Promenade, I think, podcast. So, I even think he has promenadepodcastsomething.com. It's a pretty cool link. So, check it out. Okay. Star Trek Discovery. They've had 4 episodes at this point. I don't want to keep you up all night, James, because we just might. I just want to do initial thoughts. I want to do a more in-depth review after a few more episodes air, and we have a time to really get it, see how it's grooved into itself. And because right now, my initial thought on the first night was, hated it. I couldn't stand the Klingon dialogue. But I'm starting to warm up to it a little bit at a time. So I'm starting to like it. I like the female captain. I like the female first officer. Wait a minute. Yeah?
Yeah.
But it depends on what part of the season, when you're actually referring to.
Yeah, the very first part, and then, of course, she gets booted out, and now she's got to come back. So I've watched 1 and 2 for sure. I think I watched 3, but I don't think I've watched 4. So I got some things to watch before I really give much information, because I might be saying some of it wrong. Matt, what about you? What are your initial thoughts so far?
Well, it's definitely a unique take on Trek. So far, I'm actually enjoying it. I like what they're trying to present. The special effects are beautiful.
Yeah.
I like the designs of the ships. I know some people don't, but I actually, I like kind of the way they went with it, especially the Shenzhou. I thought it was kind of a unique perspective to put the bridge on the underside of the saucer.
I didn't even notice that. So I don't think I've gotten to the point where I really have seen much of the ship at all. Because, like I said, I thought 1 and 2 was actually the beginning, but actually it's supposed to take you into what happened previously, and then here we are today type thing.
Well, episodes 1 and 2 are kind of like a prologue for the series.
Right.
It sets up the situation. Right, 1 and 2 are set on the Shenzhou, and then 3 is when they get to the Discovery.
So I don't remember, just like I kind of don't remember much of Beyond. But here, James, you too.
Okay.
I said brief, James. Now we're going to talk about it.
Yeah, I didn't get any notice on this one. Okay, dokey. Let me just put down. I have to put down here that I've only seen 2 episodes. I've seen the first and the second. But to be honest with you, I kind of thought the first and the second were pretty much like one single episode. I don't know whether or not this series is becoming like a full on proper arc, like things like 24 and Homeland are, where there's just one continual narrative that goes through. But certainly the first 2 appear to be that, and I don't know whether that's just that it's like the first 90-minute pilot that was happened to be split up into 2. I think overall there are some positives, and there are things that I'm worried about. So positive wise, I think the actors and the guys on board seem to be very good. I think the production value seems to be astonishingly high. I don't particularly mind the art design. I don't particularly mind kind of the design of the universe per se. I think it's clearly not set in the original universe, and I know that someone will say, well, it technically is. No, it's not. I think the only reason why they're not saying that it's in the JJ verse is that they have to pay him money. I just can't see how it's not in that world. But maybe even away from that, right? I kind of got the feeling from the first 2 that it's in the spirit of that universe, if nothing else. I think that my main concerns at the moment are as follows. I don't think we don't seem to have an ensemble in the way that we had an ensemble on the other, at least the last 4 Kanaika series. I don't know whether that changes, and given that the first 2 episodes are indeed a prologue, I don't know how realistic it would have been to have the ensemble introduced at that stage. I do like the lieutenant commander dude on the ship, the alien guy that looks weird. That's the best I can come up with at the moment. I think he's very good. I think he's an interesting character, and I do like him. I also like the main lead. I think that she's perfectly fine. Although I have to say, by the way, I was never a huge fan of when I was first watching either Sisko or Picard or Janeway or Archer. So maybe I'm not the best person to talk to in terms of, or getting a temperature read on whether or not the main character is going to work out. My main worries are as follows. I almost would have preferred it not to be set in the time where it is, because I think it just, it kind of puts them into a particular bind that they shouldn't need to be in. So I'd much prefer this, even if it's the same design, the same aesthetic, but just put it out, post-Voyager. I would have just been kind of felt happier, because at this stage, at the back of my mind, I'm always worried about they're going to run into some canon and do something to contaminate my beloved original series or my beloved TNG. I would have preferred them not to go heavy on the Klingons. I think we've gone heavy on the Klingons a lot, and I would have preferred, I mean, on a fuller discussion, I'll talk about this probably a bit more, but I would prefer that if you're going to be doing things that are different from what we currently have, or even if you're going to be doing the same kind of stories that we've seen on the Klingon culture, I don't necessarily see what's to be gained by going deeper into the Klingon world. One small nitpick that I don't like, the best way to phrase this, I think, is that when Star Wars came back with its prequels, they kind of fell into this really weird habit of basically assuming that there's only like four or five actors in the entire world that had any impact on these galactic events. So very quickly you wrapped yourself up into too much lore with Darth Vader having created C-3PO and Chewbacca being with Yoda fighting the clone troopers and even things like Boba Fett being the kind of, you know, the father of the clone troopers. All of this in my mind is tying it up in this into a real nonsense, and as a result I do have a problem with Sarak being connected to the captain, well, not the captain, the commander, the Burnham. Yeah. And I just don't see what the payoff could possibly be. Now I'm very early on, maybe that's going to completely prove me wrong, but I kind of, yeah, I don't want that thread to be there any more than I wanted, you know, T'Pol to be Spock's grandmother or Tuvok to be Spock's grandson. I just don't need it there, because it becomes too much of a, you know, too much of a almost a religious biblical story rather than an actual story about what humanity is going to do in the future. From the first two episodes, I hope that we're going to move over towards some more of the kind of Star Trek-y questions, because I think the first episode in particular was very kind of action heavy, which it kind of needs to be, and many pilots in the past have been. I would hope that there's enough time in the series for them to breathe and to deal with certain pseudo philosophical discussions, such as whether or not a genderless species is right to attach themselves to either a man or a woman, as we will be discussing later on in this episode. And I don't know whether or not the style of the show is going to allow that to be nurtured in the same way. Anyway, sorry about that, Lou. You came to me expecting a short answer, eh?
Brief.
Who's the fool now?
Okay. Well, hopefully we'll get more out of you later, because, you know, I guess you don't need to do the Discovery podcast now.
No, just fill up.
Yeah, because I wonder what timeline is this? Where is this in canon at all? I can't figure it out. Is this before Spock? I know Sarek is there. Is it a different Sarek? Why can't there be? There's more than one Lou in this world. It doesn't say Sarek, Spock's father.
If it did, there might be more than one Spock.
There you go.
That is one thing, right, that we always assume. It's like even within recent history, if someone were to mention, you know, a reference to either President Bush or President Roosevelt, you would assume that they would be talking about one guy. Mm-hmm. But in both those cases, there are two of them. So, you know, who knows? Maybe it is a different Sarek.
They very well could be. Okay, so you mentioned ship design. Matt, I think you like the ship design. And so let's talk another ship design. How about the Orville? I don't think we've discussed the Orville because, well, it's been, 3 weeks since we came on? Or even if we did, it was a brief thing.
Yeah, last time we talked about it, you hadn't seen it yet, but you were going to.
I was going to. And boy, am I glad I did. I mean, this... I think this is like a Star Trek Spaceballs all lumped in one, and I think that's their goal. They're poking fun at both of them while still being like them. The dog licking his balls in the background. Like, am I the only one seeing this? And not only was I not the only one seeing this, One guy even brings it up. Hey, do you notice a dog licking his balls in the background? First thing I noticed. And it just, I think this is hilarious. Hey, you know, he has the villain who's about ready to destroy the ship. But so, could you move just a little bit to the right? You know, move over to the right, please. You know, you're oddly framed. And that villain's like, what? So, I love the Orville. I mean, compared to, like, Discovery, I'm absolutely in love with the Orville. It's funny, and it's just obnoxiously funny.
It took a few episodes for it to really find its feet, but it sure didn't take long.
No. I like it. I can't stop laughing when I think about it, man.
Even that the third episode about a girl, uh-huh. I saw a lot of parallels with that episode and the one we're going to talk about today.
There's
a lot of cross-pollination on these stories.
Yeah. So we like it. James, have you had a chance to see it yet?
Well, unfortunately, it's not being distributed at the moment in the UK because, you know,
reasons. I gotta find a way to get this to you then. I mean, I got Play On is what it's called, and I've already got them downloaded. They're downloaded on my computer. I can watch them anywhere at any time. I've got to find a way to get them to you so you can watch them.
So I'm sure you'll probably find them kind of zoomed in a factor 50 on YouTube or something. No. But yeah, at the moment, it's as far as I'm aware, there is no way to view them in the UK. I assume at some point that's going to have to change because, someone's going to be prepared to pay something to get the rights to this, and the guys that have made it, they're going to be prepared to take the money rather than not. Or it'll be released on DVD or something, right? So hopefully I'll be able to see it one day.
They're all at least 1 gigabyte in size, so it's going to be a little difficult to just like...
If you could email them, that'd be fine.
Yeah, right.
But the latest episode was directed by Jonathan Frakes.
Seriously?
The one that came out last week.
Priya?
Yep.
Hmm. Okay.
And it has a very distinct Star Trek type storyline as well. I'm not going to give it away if you haven't seen it, but
yeah. Okay. So anyway, now that we've discussed everything but Star Trek, I need to copy and paste where you can start reading again.
We're only half hour into the show. I guess we ought to talk about the episode, huh?
Sure.
All right.
Lou, you promised these would be 25-minute reviews. I haven't brought that up for a while.
Says the man who doesn't know what brief means.
Who's it?
I know what brief means. Oh, well, yeah, it's true. You may know, but knowledge and execution. Go ahead.
Sure. No, I agree. It's my fault.
All right, here we go. The synopsis for tonight's show is Riker falls in love with Saren, a member of an androgynous race known as the Genai, who dares to be female. This is the 17th episode of Season 5 of Star Trek The Next Generation. It was originally released on March 16th, 1992, written by Jerry Taylor and directed by Robert Shearer. Guest stars include Melinda Kula as Saren, Callan White as Crate, Megan Cole as Noor, and a whole bunch of other female actors playing the androgynous Genai.
Mm-hmm. By the way, are they all female? I thought there was a couple. Were there no men at all?
I thought there were, but according to Memory Alpha, they were all female.
I thought the one right at the beginning looked... I mean, this is going to sound horrendous, right? Because all I'm going to now say, what I'm really saying, and I didn't realize I was saying this, and I'm now catching myself, which is that they all look rather masculine. And yeah, I'm sorry if I thought that woman playing an androgynous species could pass himself off as masculine. That's pretty not good. Okay, I'm going to dig myself out of this hole and move on.
Well, I always thought the No More Commander was a man back then, but definitely not. I've seen her in other things, including The Practice. I just saw her recently in The Practice. She's a wife of a law professor who is charged with murder for defending his wife after the guy killed his cat. But anyway,
you're just determined to talk about anything else, aren't you?
Love the practice. Love the practice. But anyway.
Well, I gotta ask right off the bat, Lou. At any point in this episode, are you gonna be telling us about your genitals?
Unlike Riker, no. I don't know why Riker didn't go, well.
Yeah, I remember watching this when I was relatively young, but now kind of as an adult and also as a dad who has a bunch of boys that are 11, 12 or so, we're coming into that. How old is Riker? What, 7 or something? I've had easier conversations about this with my children than Riker is able to have with a fully grown member of another species. He seems to. It's perfectly reasonable for them to be able to have a proper biological conversation here.
All right, James, you lead it. What are your sexual organs like?
I
just don't want to know. They're well used. That much we have an idea of.
You have a dog's tail?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Boy. At the...
Well, and snips and snails. I do not know why my printer is making noise, but I'm trying to mute to stop the damn thing. Stop it. Well, I'll just let it go. Anyway, so... It is a fly in my face. This is not good today. Want to start over? I don't know. I mean, yeah, a Riker should have said, well, there's a way for you to find out.
No. No, this is completely against what I'm saying. He's a... I think that both him and also Crusher, right? I mean, Crusher is a doctor. Someone coming up to a doctor and saying, oh, what's the difference between men and women? He shouldn't kind of start blushing and thinking, oh, yeah, we paint our nails. And, oh, come on. I mean, she's supposed to be a professional even away from being a professional, she's a grown human. What are they doing? I think that they're falling over themselves to kind of bring up 1950s stereotypes on some of this. Anyway, I'll stop and let's take it from the top. Because my first note, by the way, is that techie science is always fun to open Star Trek.
Techie science?
Yeah, they give you the story about when this planet was formed, there's a little bit of a hole in this part of space and things can fall into it. And that's always interesting for a 14-year-old nerd, right?
Well, absolutely. So you're saying it's not real? That can't happen?
Okay, I doubt it could happen. Okay, so I don't think it could happen for a couple of reasons. What you would need in order for... So what they're trying to describe here is that they're trying to get something that's going to beam... that's going to bend light around it. Now, the real question is that, well, how does this phenomena bend the light, bend the energy? And realistically, I think at this precise moment, Lou, we heard that.
Nice.
At this precise moment, the only thing you can really do there is kind of, gravity and have like a gravity well. And effectively, you're looking at, gravitational lensing going on. And there's just not enough space. And the guys that fall into the hole would be kind of shrunk to death. So I'm not entirely sure what that trying to get at. But look, as a way of introducing phenomena in a science fiction show that has no relevance on anything, I'm going to have to stop now. What? What's the matter, Luke?
I'm sorry, I can't help that. I know.
Good job you're editing, then.
I hate that editing. Damn it. I'm sorry, go on, James.
No, what I'm saying is...
Five shades of red.
There's nothing wrong with... There's a lot wrong with the science, but it doesn't matter because it's not integral to the plot. I mean, we've been saying this a lot. It's a relatively nice idea that they've got a package on which energy bends around, but I don't think it's realistic within a solar system.
I'm a doctor, not a physicist.
But that's not true.
that's what? Not a doctor? A doctor what?
But not a physicist.
Oh.
That's
the opposite. Wait, yeah, that is not true, actually, in this case.
That's one of my old Star Trek Burger King toys from when the 2009 movie came out. Bones saying, I'm a doctor, not a physicist.
Yeah. And he's both.
All right, so we start from the beginning.
Did you hear any of that banging on my microphone?
No.
Thank God, I figured out which one it is. Hey, I'm sorry. This show is brought to you by Pepsi Cola, made with real sugar. And if you know Pepsi, you know why. We're helping the Genii to investigate the mysterious disappearance of one of their shuttlecraft. It will also give one of our senior staff to an opportunity to investigate how there could be no gender in these people. No males, no females, nothing.
I didn't notice that from the very beginning, the captain's log, he makes special note to say, oh yeah, these guys have no gender too.
Yeah.
I'm like, is that really necessary? I mean, you can't just say we're helping the Genii to help their crew members.
Yeah.
But no, he actually has to say, oh, and they're an androgynous race too.
Like, what does that mean? Androgynous. I guess I could have looked up the word, but I really don't know what it means.
Oh, I mean,
I'll let the doctor answer that one.
I don't have a scientific explanation, but I always took it as being genderless, or without gender. But maybe that's just that potentially might be inaccurate and just part of vernacular use. I don't know. So I don't know what it would be scientifically.
Okay. It just seems like they spend way too much time on the whole non-gender thing. So, how do you dance? Do you dance?
So this is something that... Maybe I'm jumping a little bit too far ahead, but I think a question that's worth asking here is that really, what is the story? What are they trying to get across? What issue are they trying to address here? And I think that since it was aired 25 years ago, or so, you might imagine that what they're talking about here is being genderless. And I think that when you look at it, today, and you go back and you think, okay, well, they've got a story about a genderless species. It must be talking about, people. Either not having gender or people being born into a different gender that they feel comfortable with and things like that. But I don't think that's what they're talking about at all, because they make no effort to answer any of the questions of gender other than in a very superficial way with Riker and Troy talking about, hey, there's a vague difference because, men are stronger and they've got, broader chests or whatnot. And really, they define this thing about gender as simply being attracted to the female gender. In this case, I read this as being attracted to men, and the male gender is read as being attracted to women. So I think this is just about sexuality and not about gender. And I think that when you look at it 25 years later, you think, well, why didn't they ask the more deeper questions about gender? But I would imagine it just wasn't on the radar in 92 or so. And I really think what they're trying to say here is that, hey, what happens when you go against the cultural norms of your society and you happen to be attracted to someone that you're not supposed to be attracted to? And as a result, I think this is, this is nothing to do with gender. It's all about homosexuality. And I don't know. I mean, am I missing something here? Is it?
I know that was their attempt, according to Memory Alpha, but there was a severe failure.
Well, I don't know if it was a failure. That's what I got out of it when I watched it. That's exactly what I was thinking too. It's not necessarily gender. It's more sexuality and what you find attractive and what society deems appropriate and not appropriate.
Okay, let's talk about the Orville again. James, you're probably going to step out of this one because you haven't seen it yet. But there is a bridge officer who is male, and he lives in a species of all males. He has a mate on the ship with him. They're both men. They're married. Yep. And they have a baby. Now, there's a whole storyline about that baby. Because the fact that it is born female. And so, what are these people going to do about that? But that is one thing I actually thought was courageous about the Orville, is that they went exactly where I think Star Trek could have went at some point, even with Rejoined. And, so I guess the question is, here's a good debate for you, but before I ask this question, Matt, did you want to say anything about what James was talking about first? With the possible homosexuality thing, because I didn't see it. I don't have it in here at all.
Maybe my eyes have been, they've been clouded by the view of this being a show about, homosexuality. Maybe had I watched this fresh and knew nothing about it, maybe I wouldn't have gotten it out of it. But knowing what I know when I watched this episode, that's how I interpreted it. And especially the diatribe that she gives at the end, where she's like, "Who are you to determine what is appropriate for me?" And I thought that really nicely tied in, and it's still relevant today.
Mm-hmm. So Lou, can I get clarity on this? I mean, are you saying that you didn't see it as a kind of like a parable for homosexuality, or are you saying that it kind of didn't work 25 years down the line in exposing like the truths associated with it?
Well, I thought if they did, they went too safe by making the entire species female. Now, I know they're not supposed to be female, but they casted obvious females. A lot of them. I mean, they tried to hide nice big bumps in their chest, but yes, they made them all female. They went too safe. And that's why I was about to say, I think we could start a debate here. What if Zorn had been a man? Even Jonathan Frakes says he thinks it should have been. That would have been courageous.
Okay, no, sure, but I don't think that decision per se changes the story from being about homosexuality to not being about homosexuality. I think it changes the story from being about homosexuality and then having executed rather lamely versus it being about homosexuality and then probably having, I don't know, they probably would have had a lot of heat thrown at them and a lot of publicity thrown at them, and there might have been controversy about the issue. Mm-hmm. So I don't, it's almost, if the only thing you're changing is the real world gender of the actor playing the role and everything else remains the same, I can't see that you're really changing the in-universe story. But I certainly do accept the criticism, and I think it's a valid one, that in order to show how enlightened we are as Star Trek viewers and how accepting we are, we have taken a woman and put a woman to be dressed up as a kind of like a non-woman hybrid or a woman-male hybrid, and we weren't either prepared or the writers weren't prepared to have it as a man, and I do think that there is a legitimate criticism there.
Would we like it the same if it was?
Well hang on, just to be clear, I think this episode sucks.
Yeah. Oh, we never did go into our brief thoughts of it.
You tipped your hand again. Oh, gee.
We got James. It sucks. Matt, you like it because you want it on it. Me, I'm indifferent. I don't know about it. I don't think they had the balls to do it right. But
by the way, I'd probably echo that more than just saying that it sucks. I don't think it sucks per se. I think it. I think there are issues on which it hasn't aged particularly well, and I think for the issue that I think that they're clearly trying to address, which is what happens in matters of love and sex when you go against the cultural norms, in particular with respect to homosexuality, then I think that they were they could have been braver.
Well, and also to be fair. Like you were saying before, this was 1992. Had they cast a male in that role, I'm not willing to say that, you know, this episode might not have even made it to air. You know, there may have been somewhere along the lines that they have said we can't show this because of that.
Right.
So, you know, maybe they did play it safe, but maybe that, you know, I'm willing to give them the benefit of the doubt that might be because otherwise they couldn't have even done the episode at all.
Yeah, and you always have to consider the, you know, the show and in fact any art, right, in the context in which it was created. Now, I mentioned a second ago that the fact that the real world gender of the actor playing the role doesn't matter from the storytelling perspective.
Right.
But if that allows the studio to be able to put it on the air and shut down certain criticism and say, no, it's nothing about homosexuality, dude. It's about these people that have this weird and wonderful setup and we're investigating their issues. It's got nothing to do with homosexuality at all. If they have to use that as a cover and they have to cast a woman in order to be able to kind of get that past the censors, I'm all in favor of that. And, you know, this goes back to Gulliver's Travels and the rest of it, where you create a fantastical place in order to tell real world stories about the present that you're living in, and you're able to hide it in the fantastical world. And if this was a necessary condition of them doing it, then I'm happy. If this were done now, I would both expect that wouldn't be necessary. So it would be more seen as a regressive step not to cast a man. And I also, frankly, I think that the issue that I raised at the beginning of the question of gender separate sexuality is not addressed in this episode. And I think as a society, that's become more more prevalent and more discussed in the open.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, an interesting question. I wonder, though, couldn't she just like go to the computer and say, show me a naked man? I'm not being sick here. I mean,
no. I really thought...
Is there no porn in the 24th century? She doesn't need to ask Riker how it's done. She can just figure it out herself.
Or you know, when she asked Dr. Crusher about it, Crusher should have pulled up the Grey's Anatomy or, human sexuality, and there's textbooks to explain this stuff, and if you're really wanting to know.
But really, Dr. Crusher had no reason to be embarrassed. I mean, all she wanted to know was, why do you put things on your face and your mouth, and why is your hair different? That's simple. Easy. Is it to attract a man? Well, not always. Yes, it is. Or it's to attract something, whether it's a man or not.
Boy, we're jumping all over this place.
Man, I know. We don't.
We are.
Sometimes we go in order. Most of the times we don't. Okay. So, looks like their shuttle wandered into something called null space.
Okay. I've got a couple of issues before we get to this, because let me just go through them really quickly. Which is that, hey, you're a pilot. No, I'm a pilot. Let's both be a pilot together. That doesn't make sense. That's you can't both be the pilot. There's only one pilot. So I didn't quite. I thought that was a slight artificial setup in how they do it. But you know, it is what it is. And then the other thing that they do, they specifically have the scientist here saying that. Riker says we're going to map this out because LaForge wants it mapped out, and she goes, "Well, how can we map something we can't see?" And I kind of had a bit of a forehead slap, thinking. Really? You can't think of a way? You know, Something fell in the hole. You want to measure where the hole is? You can't think of any way in which you can measure it? None? Okay. We'll have to leave that one there. No wonder she's so confused.
Yeah. Well, okay. So what about during the mission? It was a bumpy ride. Riker hit his head and is knocked out. And she's sitting there going, what do I do now? I mean, she's got to know how to operate a ship, too, just in case.
No, sure, but it was just a very convenient way that of them wanting to come together. I also have to say that there's the bit where they get in the shuttle, and she's so excited, and she looks around, she goes, oh, look, you know, they've got the fuel injectors here, and they've got the antimatter reactor there, and they've got all of this, nothing else that I can't control. I have to say, I'm the same whenever I borrow anyone's car. That's what I do. I sit down, indicator here, and I've got a gear stick there, and you've got driving. That's exactly how I behave. Try it one day. They'll look at you strange.
That is a good point. Yeah, you're so proud of yourself for knowing what this stuff is.
Is that why you kept asking the Uber driver why is he sitting on that side of the car?
Yes. The wrong side of the road.
Wrong side of the road. Because I did notice you spent a lot of the time on his side of the car. I don't know how that worked out, but you seem to be in the passenger side of the car. Like, well, excuse me. What would be the passenger side of your car? And I found myself on the right a lot. And I thought, did that just work out that way? Or are you so used to being on the left side that you just naturally go to the left?
I sleep on the left side of the bed, if that's in any way insightful. I'm pretty sure it was random.
Okay. Well, anyway. That was neither relevant or necessary. Okay. Okay, so like I said, number three says, I do have to say that they did their best to hide the obvious women's upper stuff, and they did a pretty good job on Soren. They didn't on all the others, but pretty cool.
But hang on a second. What makes you think that these women do not have mammary glands in order to feed their young?
That's true. Because it seems to me they sure did. They went out of their way to hide the stuff, like they have nothing.
No, sure, but is that? I mean, they're obviously to a certain extent trying to desexualize or hide the standard like sexual aspects of women for the purpose of them to be able to be introduced as a legitimate, you know, non-sex species or non-gendered species. But the truth of the matter is that it's. You know, and unfortunately, as you know, form three men speaking here, it's much more likely that the woman form is the form that is the one that you need if you don't have gender, because you know you don't need ass stuff. You probably do need to be able to bear children, and you probably do need to be able to feed children, unless you're going to be unless it's going to be completely different in terms of a non-mammal like species.
Well, they don't. I think that was explained that they don't carry the children. They inseminate some sort of husk somehow. Okay,
so I've got a question. When they say husk, is it clear that that's like an external thing that they go and they visit, or how is that supposed to work?
The husk get all the fun. I don't know how they do it.
Did you guys ever watch the Enterprise episode Cogenitor?
Yes. I don't know if I should say that. That's nearly as bad as this one. Actually, I think it's worse. But they had the third species, right?
The third gender.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. They give it to the third gender who takes care of business. I think that's better than this because of the whole trip story and what happens to that person, too. Mm. No, I think you're wrong about it being worse. But when we get there...
Yeah. Oh, yeah, she tops herself, doesn't she?
Yeah. We'll get there in about 10 years. We'll discuss it.
Yeah. And that's only if we keep on podcasting through the night.
That's right. 24/7, you're listening to whatever it's called.
But this is where I think the Orville did it right by having the one species that's a single gender. Well, they're males.
Yes, you know,
they're not trying to say they're not males or not females or some in between negative nothing. No, they just went and said they're all males. They're all going to be males. So I think they kind of approach that one the right way, I think. Where, you know, in this case, right, they're trying to desexualize them in every way. The storyline just – it does – I don't know. Kind of – they don't do it as well as they could have.
Well, I don't like the notion of a state-forced gender reassignment that they did on the Orville. I think that may have been wrong. I mean, like I said, James, you have these two men that they're mates and they have a baby and turns out a female. That's not allowed in their society, so they actually gender reassign her while she's still an infant. And so, yeah, that's sad. But
that's effectively what happens in this episode, right?
Although
for gender, what you have to read is, you know, I think it's much more of a parable for sexuality.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. This episode very much was a. What's the term? Where they do the treatment to try to make you not be.
Psychotactic.
Yeah, something along those lines, where you know the. Do the techniques to make you not have homosexual desires anymore, or.
That I don't know, but I just know that it was called the term. Psychotactic treatment that they give.
Yeah.
So.
That's essentially what they did in this case.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. So, split pea soup is good for keeping you warm on a cold Alaskan night.
Yes. This is where we have the pronouns discussion.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so maybe I'm going to be horrendously petty here, but I don't think that for a race that has completely gotten rid of gender, I don't think they'd be too concerned about pronouns if they were used, because if it's completely alien to you, right? So, like, you know, in Spanish, for the third person, you have two different pronouns, whether or not you're familiar with the person or whether or not you're not familiar with the person. Now, Lou, we don't have that in English. I doubt that you'd be really, really angry if a Spanish speaker referred to you on one of them rather than the other, because you wouldn't get the context. So I don't see how you can square the fact that they don't have gender, but if you use the wrong pronoun, I'm going to get mad. It doesn't quite make sense. And then this is even before you talk about the universal translator, which I assume that they're using in order to talk to them, at which point, why doesn't the universal translator just take care of this?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, but away from that, blimey, doesn't Riker go in there quick? Why does he have to move so quick?
It was her that actually moved that quick. He was just talking about split pea soup. She's the one saying, "Oh well, we sleep with a friend."
Yeah, but even then, it's like, "Oh yeah, that sounds more fun." But oh no, not for sexual. Yeah, it still sounds more fun. Still, I mean, he was basically rubbing his knees at that point, eager to interaction. It's, I mean, this is something that at this point. So rewatching the episode 25 years later, I did, you know, you do have these natural questions about, okay, is this an episode about gender? Is it about intergenderedness? Is it a question about sexuality? And at this point, all the signs are pointing toward it's an episode about Riker getting his end away. And I feel that is really one of the things that brings this episode down. It's, you know, I was watching this and I noticed that there are literally no scenes with Data in, despite the fact that they're trying to find this, you know, scientific phenomenon discover some planet, some people have fallen into that hole. And I'm thinking, well, why isn't Data doing that? Why aren't the discussions about gender coming from bouncing off Data? Maybe Data is a better person to be able to have these theoretical discussions about. Now, he won't take you to bed even though he's fully functional, but I didn't like Riker in this episode.
It was forced, it seemed. It's not Riker. Riker, I don't think she was Riker's type at all. I don't get that he would be interested in a genderless person. I don't see him falling in love with this person. It just, why Riker? Was it to flush out his character some more? Give him more depth or something? Because he's a skirt chaser, but in this case, there's no skirt to chase.
Okay, yeah, sure. And by the way, sorry, Lou, sorry, Matt, I will be quiet after this. There's the bit where she asks him, he says, oh, what type of woman do you prefer? And he goes, oh, a woman that's intelligent and that's sure of herself. And I'm thinking, he's the guy that bones on the holodeck. What's he talking about? He's not he's not pulling that bluff on me.
No. But this is essentially what looks like their first date. I don't know. I don't see Riker hopping into whatever they hop into with her, or it. Do I call it it or her?
Well, if you want to be politically correct today, you would go say they.
They. You can't say hopping into bed with they.
Or them.
Them? Who's them? How many are them? It's like there is no personal, non-personal personal pronoun.
Well, not in English, but in other languages there certainly are, right?
with the subject. Okay, we get into bed with the subject. That sounds about, that's about as right as you can get with this.
Or you use the individual's name. Jump into bed with Soren.
Yeah. Have you had a lot of experience with the subjects? That doesn't sound right either. Rek has had a lot of experience with the subjects. Okay, so they prefer to sleep with a friend. It's a damn good thing that we were in Las Vegas, James, and not Alaska.
Yes, I concur.
I don't think he ever invited me up to his room for the night. I don't know what the deal was. It's all right. I didn't take it personal. Although I never did get my crumpets. It's a different story.
Now, she was saying that they would, you know, cuddle together, you know, to keep warm and all that. Did you guys get the impression that the Jedi don't pair off, so to speak? You know, that it seems like the whole episode they're kind of against any kind of affection towards each other in any kind of way. You know, there is no partnerships or anything.
No, she said she had parents, plural. Two Jedi were together. They inseminated the husk, and that created Soren. And then those two raised her. That's what I got. So,
but the impression you get from like the government official enforcer people is, you know, that if Soren expressed interest in somebody else, that was wrong.
No,
just regardless of who it was.
No, the only thing that's wrong is if she tries to identify herself as a gender instead of what they're supposed to be. That's what I get. They have to do something together. It'd be one boring existence.
Maybe I just saw it a different way. I don't know.
But and I just know that she said her parents.
Right.
She just talked about her parents, and that's why I figured there has to be more than one. Personally, I think, and I wish, you know, we could have, even Dr. Crusher, done a full scan to see what's underneath all those 25 pounds of clothing they were wearing.
Why?
Why not? There's got to be some curiosity there somewhere.
I'm sure Riker wanted to know.
Well, yeah. Riker should have found out. I mean, that's, you know. But somebody kept breaking in on them. You know. So tell me, Commander. Do you find me hi, Krell, or whatever your name is.
Thank you for the briefing, Commander. I'll talk to you in the morning. Goodbye.
I mean, every time they try to get together and talk, somebody breaks in and gives them dirty eyes. What is it with these people? What? And then, let's jump all the way to the end. Riker wants to take her away. Why can't they? What is it with these species, peoples, that will not let one of their society ever leave them? I would have just shipped her off and said, fine, you think you're a woman? Leave. What's wrong with that?
Well, I mean, hang on, if we're getting right to the end, if we're talking about from a society perspective, and this isn't, I mean, the rights of this aren't actually discussed, or, you know, at least we get a plea from you know, a gendered Jedi, and then she's told that, nope, you're wrong, and then it's like, oh, okay, then. So we don't actually, you know, I think as humans watching it, we kind of know what side that we're expected to land on. But from their perspective, the defense that the state puts up is that, look, you know, these guys are mentally ill. We have a duty of care here. You know, would we take someone that's in the midst of a kind of, you know, a schizophrenic episode and say, man, you're nuts. Go, you know, go over to France. You know, have fun there. I mean, I don't think that. I think from the state's perspective, there is a responsibility. Now, I think obviously it's wrong, or at least we come in with the moral compass that it's wrong for them to put this down as a mental illness and to treat it as such. But I think that's where they're coming from. So that's why they don't let her just wander off. They do see it as that they have a responsibility to ensure that she's brought back into like the mainstream. And that discussion or the consequences of that policy aren't discussed in this episode. It's very much just seen as a as you know, this person was showing characteristics outside of the mainstream. She thought that it was natural. She tried to pursue that, and then basically the state like shut her down and neutralized those feelings.
So you say if I'm wacky and I need mental help, but yet I want to move to France, but France says I'm perfectly normal, I'll fit in just fine, that I shouldn't be allowed to?
Well, I'm not saying that you shouldn't be allowed to, but there are plenty of instances where the state will take away your rights in order to make decisions based on mental impairment, right? Now, whether or not we agree with that assessment is a different question, but there is there is certainly a precedent set for people not being able to have, freedom of, freedom of anything if they have been deemed not to have all of their senses intact.
I guess the problem is we can't compare with today because we don't have space travel, nor can we just go to another planet if we don't like this one.
I find that argument slightly reductionist in the sense you can use that argument each week.
Yeah.
But the discussion, nonetheless remains interesting.
Okay. Matt?
No, I think that wrapped it up pretty nicely. That's about what I was thinking too. The only thing, I don't know. I can definitely see the parallels with the LGBT community and what they're trying to, what they're having to face in the society today. And that they're not necessarily being told they have to conform, but they are, for the most part, they're being told, we're not going to let you contribute, we're not going to give you the same rights that everybody else has, and if you want those rights, then you will conform.
But by the way, I mean, I kind of very much see the treatment here through kind of a UK prism, which is, I think the most well-known story, although it happened to many, many, many tens of thousands of men, which is that the state in the UK, and this was generally during the 40s and 50s, although it does go beyond that certainly. Homosexuality was illegal. Now, when we say homosexuality, it is a matter of fact that what we mean is man on man homosexuality. We have a curious incident here in the UK where female-female homosexuality was always fine because it was never deemed to be an issue. Or at least, I think there's a story, I'm sure it's apocryphal, which is that the Queen at the time believed that this was such a ludicrous suggestion that they refused to outlaw it. But anyway, people caught in male-on-male homosexual acts would be chemically castrated and be given hormones to suppress those kind of feelings. Famously, Alan Turing was subject to this treatment, and the crime was, to be very clear, the crime was engaging in consensual sexual activity with another male that was over the age of consent, or what would have been over the age of consent had it been allowed from male-female interactions.
Right.
And I don't know. Do you guys have? Is that something that happened out in the US as well? Is that kind of thing well known? Because it is very, very much well known in the UK, and over the last decade or two, there have been moves to get the individuals that were convicted, that were treated, pardoned, and to get all of the general stuff that goes around, basically recognizing the state was at fault all those years ago.
I don't think I remember ever seeing of any law against it. I don't want to go there, but there are sodomy laws, but I don't necessarily believe that it's in the same context as a homosexual relationship. So as far as that, no, I don't recall such a thing. No, I've never heard such a thing. I mean, that's just...
Yeah.
That sounds like old crazy religious thing there. Burning of witches and stuff.
Well, no, certainly, I mean, mid-20th century, you know, the UK had a policy whereby homosexual men would be... of which you would expect, you know, under today's days to be treated as completely respectable members of society would be treated in an appalling way to, you know, basically to go through chemical castration. And wow. Effectively the treatment that we see in this episode very much reminds me of that, and I'm sure it was intentional.
So I guess Mr. Bean never would have stood a chance, huh?
So Mr. Bean...
Mr. Bean.
Is this the British Mr. Bean?
Yes.
Mr.
Rowan
Bean.
Atkinson.
Yeah, but he's not homosexual. He's not gay.
I think he's more Janai.
What?
He's middle ground.
I always thought Mr. Bean. Now Rowan Atkinson, I don't know much about him, but I'm talking Mr. Bean. He always came off as such a kid-like, and such. I don't think he had gender identity at all. He seemed so neutral to me.
Well, I mean, okay. At what point? How different is he from someone like Pee Wee Herman? Then isn't it not the same thing? Although aren't there issues of that particular guy that I just mentioned being slightly?
Yeah, Paul Rubens.
Paul Rubens. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a history there too.
Okay, maybe I shouldn't go there.
Yeah, he was the early Michael Jackson. No, wait a second. That may even be the wrong parallel, too, actually. Paul was just a freak. What exactly did Paul get caught in? Wasn't it like a brothel house or a movie theater?
Yeah, it was a theater, I believe, that he was exposing himself or something along those lines.
Yeah, so...
Well, you wouldn't have that problem if you were a Janai.
No,
I assume.
Well, you might. I mean, it depends on what you have to expose. And how do they go pee?
it will remain a mystery.
Then again, how does anybody in the Enterprise go pee? But we don't even know that either. But okay,
Transporter just takes it, buddy.
Yeah, Transporter, take some urine, please. Thank you. Okay, so what if you'd be okay if you would be all right if Soren identified himself as male, right?
Yeah, I don't have a problem with anyone.
Do you think Riker would be okay? Would he still head? But I love you.
No, I don't. So that's
I'm thinking if Soren had displayed male tendencies or along those lines, I don't think Riker would have been as attracted to them.
And also, this is the thing about the episode, right? And I kind of mentioned or I stated at the beginning, I think that the only way that genderness comes out is through sexual attraction. So it's, you know, this story isn't that this particular person feels very, very male, and as a result, he's going to go onto the holodeck with Worf, and they're going to go hunting. So, you know, that's not the story, right? And it's very clearly not the story. So I fear that if you wanted to turn into a male, into this Janai being male, it would just be that he then wanted to then go and, you know, bang Troy or bang Crusher, and it would just be flipped that way.
That's what I was just thinking. This would be a whole new story with Dr. Crusher. Because I believe Deanna had her already within the last few episodes.
Well, this season. She's been taken care of.
Yes.
I don't mean that in a disrespectful way.
Right. Okay, so... Yeah, and I mentioned that I don't believe that Riker would even be attracted to Soren to begin with because of the whole... non-gender thing. Curious, certainly. But he knows it could never go anywhere unless he wants to inseminate a husk. So I don't see that. But that's all right.
You want to talk about the poker game?
Oh yeah. Crusher's sitting telling her, well, you know, there was a time, I suppose, when women were inferior, but hell hasn't been that way for years until she runs across Worf.
No, hang on. I've got a better quote than that, which is that what I had down was yes, in the past, women were considered weak and inferior, but that hasn't been true since Turnabout Intruder.
We can't have a woman, Captain.
Yeah.
No.
That's what that was going through my mind at that point.
Turnabout Intruder.
Oh, boy.
Okay.
Worf did not come across well in this episode.
No, they kind of needed the, we need a reactionary pig, Worf. You up for it? Yep, sure. So you have to be sexist and intolerant. That's me.
No problem. Women can't be on the council. They can't own land. Not a problem. We're your Klingon.
The thing is, I don't actually think that Worf is kind of sexist per se.
No.
What I think he is, he's very... He places a great deal of faith in tradition. And as a result, I think if the traditions are sexist, he'll probably defend them as being... I mean, I'd always put Worf as being kind of conservative in that sense. Rather, traditionalist. Not necessarily... You know, if wherever you start from, he's not someone that's going to push towards discriminating between women, but he's also not a kind of person that's going to be a radical, you know, radical socialist in order to kind of spread some type of, you know, feminist dream across the country. So I felt that I also find that Worf is a guy that can have contradictory views very easily as well. You see this with a lot of stuff, like, you know, he'll belittle other people's view of the afterlife, but then be completely confident in his own. And I do think it's because kind of Worf is... He respects tradition. He's a man of faith. And I kind of felt that this is a woman's hand. So many weird and wonderful cards. It's because women are confusing me. And I thought that was completely out of character. I mean, I think the idea of not being sure about a genderless species was slightly more in character. But getting, you know, having a problem with the rules of poker, it just didn't come across as feeling quite true.
It's hard to know what is in my hand. They're cards, Worf. Anyway. Okay. Yeah. So Soren tells Riker of a Jedi who felt that he was a boy. And the other kids teased him. And she said him, not it, or they. The other kids teased him, and then one beat the crap out of him, and the teachers found out, and he was rushed off to the emergency room to undergo the psychotactic treatment. And when he came back, he stood in front of the entire school talking about how he feels better now. They got the fever out of me, or something like that. That's another one of that's another story I thought was just embarrassing to listen to. He stood in front of the whole school and told how he felt better. In other words, they put him in there to show this is what's going to happen to you if you ever act like this again. Or if you ever act like this person.
Why do you think this was a bad story or an embarrassing story? I mean, I think that this didn't just happen at the time when the episode was aired, but I think this happens now.
Yeah.
Well, even if there's an issue with the kid, they don't make him stand in front of the whole school and demonstrate what's going to happen to other students if they ever act like me.
I mean, maybe not in the U.S., but I think there are plenty of places around the world that would have where that kind of outcome would be kind of, you know, would be the most liberal you can expect from this kind of issue.
Really.
Yeah, absolutely. and kind of, you know, re-education of, I mean, by the way, I mean, what we're talking about here is homosexuality, right? So not about a boy goes into school and says, hey, I'm actually a boy.
If we're talking about
homosexuality, then I think it absolutely does still, you know, remain the case that
not necessarily, because she didn't say, you know, he felt he was a man and he was attracted to other men. The only thing I ever got out of this story was, if one person is attracted or thinks they're a gender, they're always attracted to other people who are the other gender.
Yep, sure, sure.
That's all I got out of it.
No, which is why I think it's not a story about gender. I think which is why it's a story about sexuality, in the sense that they it was framed this way in order to discuss the issues of, you know, what happens when you go against the grain in terms of, you know, who you fall in love with.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I remembered while you were talking about that, the term I was trying to think of earlier was conversion therapy.
Conversion therapy?
Yeah, where they send somebody who's gay and they try to make them not be gay anymore. They put them through this treatment. That, yeah, it's conversion therapy was the term I was trying to think of.
And it's so stupid, too, because, I mean, it's obviously genetic, but whatever. Okay, it's not, see, and that's why I say I don't believe it's ever something that could be cured. There's no cure because there's no damn disease. Anyway, I'll get on another soapbox I don't want to be on.
I agree with you.
That's... You know, sure, but this is why in England the issue wasn't so much of it being cured, but it was about eliminating the sexual urge, which is why when I was talking before about, you know, chemical castration, I mean, it literally was chemical castration. It's that you solve the issue about two men wanting to have sex with each other by preventing the men's desire to have sex, full stop. And it's not that long ago.
Wow, that's just insane. I mean, you know, that just takes it all underground then. All right. Okay, so now they're trying to save the Janai crew, which they are able to save the crew, but boy, it sure was touch and go there for a second as they were losing energy by 22% every second.
You know, I was like, why was this shuttlecraft not loaded to the hilt with batteries and generators?
That's a good question. What if they had batteries that were shut off? Could they use them?
Well, I have to say that I'm surprised they didn't have a tow rope go into the null space with them, because it just seemed like this thing dispersed energy. I mean, it sent energy around it, and then when it was inside, it drained energy. But that doesn't mean that you can't be towed back out. So just tow them out. That's what I would have thought. Now, I've got a couple of things to say about this. I think the plan is very, very bad on two fronts. First of all, they want to track where the edges are by basically firing a phaser into it, which in my mind I just had that the other guys in the shuttle were, every now and again, they'll see a phaser come through and they go, boy, I mean, that was close, as they were basically poking in, a bit like a magician when he pokes his swords into the little box that he's managed to put his assistant into, and they just about not cut the person in half. And then the other thing I thought about, and this is slightly more technical, although it relies on some technology that doesn't exist and probably theoretically can't exist, which is that this particular area is dissipating energy. It's also reflecting energy around it that makes it very hard to be able to see or pick up on sensors. And you're going to tell me you're going to get a transporter beam out of there, which is converting all yourself into energy and sending out in a beam. I would have been wary of considering that a transporter can't really operate in high wind. What makes you think you can operate in this kind of energy vortex null space black hole? I wouldn't have put my money on it.
Seems like there should have been some testing involved, you know, kind of just cross the line, try to beam out, and if it doesn't work, edge your way back across real quick.
Yeah.
Hey, you know something, James, you pulled up, you made an interesting point that I think solves the entire issue, but finish your thought.
No, I don't have any more thoughts.
Oh, go ahead.
Okay. You said, why don't they just pull a rope around it?
Yes, that was
why not? Why not just put the shuttle that, I don't the Magellan, I believe it was, that they went on, Riker and Sorin went on to.
Yeah.
Why not attach a rope to the thing? They go in, and the Enterprise knows as long as this rope is rolling, let them go. When it stops, they've attached themselves to the Jedi shuttle, and then when they give a tug, that means pull me out.
So the reason there is that when the writers are putting together the script and they have tech the tech, they don't expect it to come back with fit the rope.
Tug the rope. Oh, yeah, it makes sense. There's no ropes in the 24th century. It's called tractor beam.
Yeah, they got rid of those back in the 22nd century.
Yeah, there you go. That's a good point.
All right, so anyway,
let's go on.
But then the obvious other flaw with the plan was that the shuttle blew up while they were mid-transport.
Yeah, I've got... I mean, I can accept the Heisenberg compensators, but what's happening with this thing blowing up mid-transport? Does the transporter beaming device do anything at all? Because if it does anything at all, it probably can't do it very well if it's blown up.
No, yeah. Unless there's something on the other side that takes over.
That was going to be my only MacGuffin on that, is possibly the Enterprise transporters intercepted the beam and then finished the process. But you know, they don't say that, and I don't know. I think that's giving the writers too much credit, I think.
Yeah, right.
And they do this so much, right? It's, I mean, even early TNG, they had the Klingon ship, I think in Heart of Glory. It blows up, and it's like, did we get them? Hang on, just give me a second. Hang on, that come in. Nearly. Yeah. Oh, there they are. I mean, how does this happen?
Well, they did,
boy, that was close.
They did it in Best of Both Worlds Part 2 as well, when they, you know, when they get Locutus back off the cube and beam off the shuttle, and the Borg blow up the shuttle mid-transport again. So
yeah. Yes, well, that's okay, because the Enterprise was the ones doing the transport, so their computers were full intact.
Oh, they were. Yep, you're right. Yep. I thought it was a button that they hit, but no, they did that to thrust out of the shields. That's right. Never mind.
And I also like when transporters stop phasers from going through you,
and ends up blowing the space station.
Yeah.
I do think that they do need to. I do think they do need to think about the transporters, the rules of transporting. Just get the rules down. But I do love. I do love the famous story, of course, about how did the Heisenberg compensators work. To which the writers replied, "They work very well, thank you."
Yes, it's good enough. That's all we need to know.
And by the way,
okay,
Lou, you know what a Heisenberg compensator is for, right?
No. In
terms of the real world.
You mean there's a real thing?
Yeah. So no, there's not a real Heisenberg compensator, but the Heisenberg compensator is designed, or it was put into the story as a way of getting around something that one would imagine you'd have to get around in order for transporters to work. Have you heard this story? And the next question is, do you want to hear the story?
Yeah.
Well, let me take a stab at it, see if I got it right. It was Heisenberg, obviously.
Okay, the last time I... By the way, let me just correct you there. I've never seen Breaking Bad, but I've got a good Heisenberg joke, by the way, and I'm happy to say that. But I got a bunch of guys that work around, and I said, look, do you know him a Heisenberg joke? It's really quite good. And at the end of it, they went, I didn't understand how that relates to Heisenberg, at which point they told me apparently there's a character on Breaking Bad called Heisenberg, and they thought I was referring to him. So we're talking about the physicist Heisenberg here, one of the fathers of quantum mechanics.
But I believe he postulates that subatomic particles or something along those lines, you can know its location or you can know its velocity, but you can't know both at the same time. Is it
with a certain precision? That's correct. So you can you know, when you measure these two things, when you multiply the error between them, it has to be greater than a certain number. So that means if you know one with certainty, you have to have an error in the other. Yes, that's correct.
Oh.
And the compensators get around that, obviously.
And yeah, the argument goes is that if you were to transport someone, you'd need to know both their position and their momentum, because if you don't, you're pretty much going to have to be screwed. So at a subatomic level, you're going to need to know that information. Otherwise, you're not going to be able to recreate the person. But Heisenberg, and then it's a like a fundamental consequence of the quantum mechanics, that Heisenberg shows that you can't know both those things at the same time. So that's why the Heisenberg compensators are there, in order for that problem to be solved. Which I think is it's kind of a great, I don't know if it's an Easter egg or not, but it's a great bit of a real world, at least a real world problem that they're attempting to solve, even if they're solving it by just saying, yeah, the compensators, yeah. Whatever.
Just let it go, in other words, they're saying. It compensates for any crap. Good. Okay, so after the crisis is all over, Riker and Soren decide to take a tour of the planet, because, after all, exobotany is a favorite of his.
I'm sure it is.
Today it is. Let's go out and let's take a look at some flowers. Alright, whatever. But while they're out there, Riker, interestingly, Riker's the one that grabs her by the arm. Do you notice that?
Yes, so not only... I mean, I think the ladies, I mean, even so even after having been married for 20 years, my skills are telling me that the woman's coming onto him here. But despite that, Riker's the guy that, you know, he pushes it, and he's the one that makes the first move. Shame on him.
Yep. Okay. But, oh well. Let's see here.
It answers that whole will they, won't they.
Will they, won't they? We don't know if they do. So Riker goes to visit Troy and tells her about his new love. And of course, before he leaves her, what's he do? He gives her a kiss too. He's just a cad. And after that kiss, he goes to visit Soren for another one from her, only to find out she's gone.
Yeah, but I have to say, I like the idea that Riker turns up at Troy's office and goes, "Oh, Deanna, I need to talk. I've met someone." And she basically says, "Yes, I know." So, oh, you're an empath. Not necessary. It's really not necessary. We've all been talking about you behind your back.
Well, I had a note about this too. I was like, at this point in the show, both of them have dated other people. Do they always have this conversation every time?
Maybe it's a bit of a turn on for Will. I don't know.
Hey, I haven't met somebody else. Again, we're still cool, right?
Yeah. Don't worry, I could come back to you someday.
Does she go have these talks with him when she's seeing somebody new? We're still cool, right?
Yeah. Fascinating. Okay. Let's see here. Where were we? Oh, yeah. So he goes back to Soren's quarters and finds out that she's gone. Sorry, you're too late. We've already taken her. So what's he do? Of course, he has to go rogue and beam down to the planet and try and stop these people.
Look, this bit is dreadful. Or what I should probably say here is that I think that they ran out of time, or they ran out of story, or whatever it happened, whichever way you want to look at it. They got to the point where it's like, okay, we've rescued the people, we've had the story, we've not really got anything else. You know, we're 10 minutes short. Okay, I don't doubt that they have to kind of face the consequences, or she might have to answer some questions and make the choice. But the fact that basically she gets taken away almost immediately, and then at that point, Riker goes to Picard and they have a small discussion before Picard basically says, you know, go on, it's okay, you can go for it, I'll turn a blind eye. And then Worf just turns up going, hey, are we up for a trek down to the planet? It's too quick.
And by the way, Worf has healed up nicely, hasn't he?
Sorry, what?
Since when?
Wasn't he just disabled last episode?
Oh, that's right. How could we possibly forget that?
Yeah, how could we forget that? Because
temporal mechanics and all.
Yes, boy, that's a toughie because I don't remember what we talked about on ethics. Wow, it was just last episode. Goodness gracious, how could we do this?
Our memory's really getting bad in our old age.
It's terrible. It's almost like we haven't recorded that yet or something.
But yeah, considering he died and came back, he's looking pretty spry this episode down there throwing punches and doing it. Anyway, sorry, yeah. I didn't mean to interrupt.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, that's an aggressive therapy session from last week, wasn't it? I don't even remember what I rated that episode at. Do you, James?
I think you rated it a 2.
Was it a 2?
Well, he did have Alexander to motivate him, so there you go.
That's why it's a 2. Okay.
Anyway.
So let's see here. Everybody knows too much of how we work here before to understand this one. Riker's offers them a choice. Why don't you let her come with me? And that's why I went into that diatribe. Just let her go, okay? If she's a deviant and he wants her to come with him, then just let her go. I don't know. To me, it's that simple. We'll fix her. What if she wasn't a female? What if she just was her genderless, but she fell in love with Riker? Is she still not allowed to go with him?
Well, that's what I was saying before. It seems like it was really, they were trying to say this isn't allowed regardless of what was going on with her.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I don't know.
Okay. Well, okay, like Dr. Timison. It's another one. Don't you dare try to leave this system with that man on board your ship. Why? He doesn't want to kill himself yet. Why not let him go? Well, if we did that, everybody would want to do that. Okay, then why not let him go? You know, what's the incentive to killing people and having to bury them on your planet when you could just let them go? Anyway, but it doesn't work. She's taken away. And has her psychotactic treatments. So, they beam down with, like you said, Riker and Worf, but it's too late. They kick a couple of Janai ass, and then she finally levels it. So, what's wrong with you? I don't know what I was thinking.
I gotta ask, what was Riker's plan? He kind of
get her and
he kind of
make her fall in love with him again.
Well, but I mean, he kind of grabs her, runs her up. Was he intending to take her back to the ship?
Yeah. Oh yeah, he was going to get her out of there. He was going to take her away somehow.
Then what was the point of nabbing her? Just beam her up.
Well, then it wouldn't have been as dramatic. But then again, how do you know which Janai is her?
But then they left Worf behind too. I don't know what he was doing. They ran into the woods.
It gave him psychotactic treatments. Worf has no idea what gender he is.
And I'm like, but I'm just trying to. I'm trying to plan this. You know, so he takes her to the ship. Is Picard going to be okay with this?
I think he was. I mean, they're just sitting up there. They've got orders to immediately go to the next starbase or something, and he's just kind of sitting there. I didn't know how to answer Starfleet. You want to give me an answer, or are we done here?
But I think he specifically said when he was talking to Riker, he's like, I can't help you with this, right? Yeah. I think that when Saren got back up to the ship, Picard's going to be like, was this cool? Is your government going to be okay with this? I don't know what the plan was.
Not only that, actually, if you think about it, Picard would have had a responsibility and duty to stop him.
Or was Riker going to hide her on the ship?
No, I think he was just going to let her come on board. Picard was going to do the ceremony. Data was going to give her away. You know, he's going to be the father of that bride. That's what I thought the whole idea was.
Oh, that
was interesting. Yeah, I think the ultimate plan here was that Riker was going to beam her up and she's going to live in his quarters for the rest of until they crash in Generations. And he has a nice, you know, a servant lady slash wife. And none of this is thought through, which is why I just think that what they did here is they, I don't know whether they ran out of time or they ran out of nerve and they felt that they needed some action this week. I mean, it's bad action. It's not, I don't think anyone wants to watch this episode to see this. I'd much actually rather see a proper discussion of the issues at hand, right? Something that you can, like, you know, you walk away and you think about, or maybe just do see it as, you know, this is what happens, and then people have to, like, you know, mull on the consequences. Whereas, really, after Worf and Riker run into the lady after she's gone the therapy, they kind of just, they don't talk about it afterward. It's almost as if, oh, well, sad, isn't it? And then they just move on. They don't have a discussion about that, you know, they felt that something was lost in that. From the perspective of the state, you know, maybe this thing worked perfectly well, but maybe from an individual perspective, something was lost, and, you know, Riker was the only one close enough to see that actually something was being destroyed here, other than just this propensity to, you know, want to be with men, something that was slightly more special. So I think they try to dodge a lot of these, they skillfully dodge these issues as they kind of close out the episode, and I think it's a real shame.
Right. Well, yeah. I mean, she just walks off.
Can I'm gonna bring in a there's the scene when they're in court, or I'm going to call it court, but you know what it was, and like Riker just walks in. It's like, hey, this is a closed session, and it's like, oh yeah, I know, I'll be quick.
What? I just opened it.
How does that work? It reminds me of back in the day, I used to watch a lot of Simpsons, and there's a bit where they're actually on the, they have a cup to the TV, the news presenter, and he makes the statement. He goes, well, you know, broadcasting from a live courtroom is illegal in this state, so we'll have to be very, very quiet. Yeah, logically, it doesn't make sense, but that's what logically Riker was doing here. He's like, I don't know. I'm surprised. If he turned up in an American court, I mean, or a British court, surely he'd be in prison or dead on the floor, right? I mean, these guys must be relatively relaxed to allow that to happen.
Well, yeah.
I don't know. Well, was this actual legal proceeding, or was it just more of a hearing? Or I don't know. I guess it depends on how stringent this procedure actually was.
No, sure. And I like the quote from, I'm coming to the end of some of my notes here, but so I'm a bit all over the place. I like the quote from Riker when he mentions that, oh, no, she was really important to me. And back in my mind, I'm thinking, but by this time next week, she won't be. We'll never hear from her again. I think that what did you guys think about the actual speech that she gave? And I think we touched upon it at the top of the episode, but I kind of felt that the message they were putting across was a perfectly valid and a perfectly good message and a perfectly kind of, you know, a decently propped up that side of the argument I found to be not particularly objectionable. And I felt that that's really the message they were trying to put across on the entire episode, which is that, these people, and I do think it is, you know, code for homosexuality, you know, we're not deviants. We are the same as you. We do things different, but we're not something to be feared. And I think that, you know, that's a powerful message to get out there, certainly, 25 years ago.
No, and it's still just as valid today.
Right.
Well, things, I'd like to believe it's not, it doesn't need to be as valid today. And
no.
It obviously depends on, you know, where you are around the world. But certainly I think it's almost as if, actually, this episode aging badly and us having a little bit of fun about why they didn't do this and why they weren't stronger here, it's probably says more about where society has come in the last 25 years than anything critical about Star Trek. And I'd love for in the same way that when we look at some of the original series and we think, well, that's a, you know, that's a pretty heavy-handed, you know, a very clear heavy-handed message about the perils of the Vietnam War. But at the time, it wasn't seen in that manner. I'd like, you know, many of these stories like this to really transition into that phase as hopefully, you know, society, you know, becomes more open and more tolerant to kind of minorities.
Yeah, I mean, her whole thing fell on deaf ears completely. I mean, the judge or whatever, she just calls it a diatribe.
That was interesting. That was when they cut to commercial break. When you're like, how is she going to respond? And then they come back from commercials. Oh well, you just admitted it. Thank you. All right, go for your treatment.
Yeah, that's all we needed. Yeah. Yeah, I admire your admitting that we don't have to go through any more. Just take her. Nope, I hate that. I always made fun of no more, Commander. But
sorry, what was that?
Somehow the hearing "no more, Commander," it reverberates in my brain for some reason. Her voice, that woman's voice, is just. So,
technically not a woman.
It must not be.
It was the actress trying to lower her voice to try to seem less feminine, but not quite masculine.
Then you have to watch her on The Practice. It's the same voice. Oh. No, she does have a... Yeah. That is her normal voice. Yeah. Yeah, just do a YouTube search for The Practice and maybe look up her name or something. But anyway... So I guess that's it, guys, right? 11 o'clock at night, and it's time for James to go to bed. So it's time for our final thoughts and ratings on this episode on a scale of 1 to 5, with 1 being the worst and 5 being the best. Matt, how about you? Let's start it up.
Oh, start it off with me. All right. Well... To my memory, this was the first time Trek really tried to tackle a same-sex type issue in an episode. Unless there's one that you guys can think of, I think this not their first attempt.
We're just not used to these kind of changes.
Oh well.
The thing is, I maintain that's not about something else.
No, yeah. Well, when the doctor, whatever his name was, is in himself, O'Don is himself, yeah. She's fine. When he's in Wrecker, she's even finer. When it goes to a woman, we're just not used to these kind of changes. No. Anyway, go on, Matt.
Well, I stand corrected then. Yeah, they did touch on it a little bit in that. But, you know, as an attempt to have commentary for 1992, for the shortcomings this episode has, it is... pretty daring that they took the attempt to actually try to tell this story. I think for some people it may have gone right over their heads. For other people, I think it was bonk bonk on the head what they were trying to say. But you know, as a whole, I appreciate their attempt to do it, and I, for the most part, I think that they told the story they were trying to tell. You know, in terms of, you know, like James was saying earlier about, you know, homosexuality as it is today. You know, the episode has its flaws, obviously. I think they spent, you know, when they should have been focusing on rescuing this shuttle crew in this null space, they spent a whole lot of time talking about other stuff. I don't think they quite had their priorities straight. but as a whole, I think they did a pretty good job with this episode, and yeah, as a first real strong attempt to have social commentary of this nature, I'm gonna give it a 4. It's not perfect, but I think that, you know, I think a lot of the messages still hold up today, and it's still applicable. You can watch this even now and come away with, boy, yeah, we still have a lot to learn as a society.
Okay. Looks like I got that one pretty correct. I guessed a 4, so let's see if I can get James next. How about James?
So, I think this is a hard one to score, to be honest, because I do think that this is probably the episode of Star Trek that is most connected to the time in which it was aired that we've done so far. So I think that Best of Both Worlds is great, Clank regardless, and Unification is what it is, and it's not a I very much see this as being kind of the analogy for homosexuality and not anything on the gender side, which, you know, if anything, I think over the last 25 years has more crept into the public consciousness as hopefully, and obviously still progress it needs to be made towards making, you know, acceptance of homosexuality much more of a, you know, a thing that, you know, most tolerant societies would perfectly accept willingly. I think it's very easy to kind of ridicule some of the things that go on. I think that the episode, it steers. I don't think it provides like a tremendous amount of social commentary in the way something like Measure of the Man does, and it's in how it's able to deal with its issues and project them onto kind of, you know, onto real life or onto the kind of outside world. I think this one does come up short, but at the same time, it is very, very connected to the age and to the time in which it was made. I'm really struggling to come up with anything, anything reasonable here. I personally don't have a lot of love for the episode. I don't particularly like the Riker character in general, and, you know, an episode which can be potentially dismissed as, hey, you know, Riker's so horny he'll even go after a girl that, you know, is dressed up as a boy, I find hard to engage with. I should also probably point out that I'm not homosexual, and I don't, you know, I never saw this as a kind of a story that I was able to relate to on a kind of like a personal basis. Unlike some of the stories that always come up with Data, where I kind of would always, you know, I love them more because I felt that they kind of really spoke to me as an individual. So this one's really tough. I think I'm going to be a real damp squid here and come in straight down the middle. I think it's an important episode for what it tries to do. I think that it has to be viewed in context. I'm really not in love with it. And yeah, this is probably the hardest to judge. I mean, I feel like if I came in at a two or lower, it would be slightly not giving credit to the actual challenge they took upon themselves to actually, you know, to put into fiction kind of real world issues and handle proper, you know, proper debate. So let me come in at a 3 out of 5 and be a total kind of, you know, wet blanket cop out. What about you, Lou? And by the way, Lou, if you come in under a 3, it doesn't mean that you're a you're mean or anything. I'm not able to watch it. I'm just not able to, to really form my own thoughts on this one well enough for me to be confident in order to downgrade it.
Well, you've got more thoughts than me then, because I didn't really look at it through that paradigm, those lenses. I just looked at it as Star Trek has no balls. That's what I looked at.
You don't know whether the Jedi.
I said Star Trek. We don't know what the Jedi have because, you know, they're surrounded by 30 pounds of clothing, and I think that's intentional to make sure there's no, you know, do the Jedi have wider hips than the humans?
Hey, you don't know that's clothing.
Well, I don't know. I mean, where does Odo's comm badge go when he goes back to his goo? I don't see the comm badge floating around or dropping on the ground. So even the comm badge is a changeling, but yet it works. Anyway. No guts. They have no guts. No guts means no glory. So why not make Sorin a man? I mean, take a frickin' risk once in a while. I guess this is the reason why I'm giving the score I am. story of a species with no gender, all played by women, no less. It is an interesting one. The fact that it's played by all women is, I guess, in the end, meaningless. It's not the point that they're all played by women. However, even Jonathan Frakes agrees with me. Soren should have been a man. Let's take a risk. Let's just do it. It would have been a very interesting story, because then you would have had two men discussing their differences between what should be the same but wasn't. I think it would have been a better story in the end. But we'll never see one of them jump out of the sonic shower, so we're never gonna know what happens or what that was. The story how they reproduce is a bit unrealistic. I don't even know what a husk is. Do you? Does anybody know what a husk is? No.
No.
Do we have anything that would be similar as a husk? I have no clue. It's just not the best Trek for me. I wish they had taken it a little bit deeper. I wish they would have been a little more riskier. I don't see it at 3. I'm sorry to say. I see it 2. I see a very 2. This is one I could do without. If it never showed again, I would be just fine with that. But I'm not saying I will never watch it again. That's fine. But it doesn't go on car rides with me, and I just don't think of it. So that's kind of where my head is in this game of the 2. So.
Well, there's no shame in that, Lou.
Well, yes, there is. He said it's a cop-out.
No, I said I was a cop-out for taking the 3. Oh. Because I didn't enjoy the episode, but I do recognize that, in particular for the time in question, it was saying things that were that were important, that they were out there and they were said. Now, actually, by the way, I mean, let me put you into some perspective of when this aired in the UK. I mean, this aired in the UK at a time when I believe that Elton John was being hounded in the press for being gay. Freddie Mercury of Queen had died, you know, a couple of years prior to that, of AIDS, and again vilified in the press for being gay. Within a couple of years, we had a change of government out in the UK that kind of brought in the first openly gay members of parliament into kind of, you know, positions of power and authority, who were completely torn apart in the press for being gay. When I was at university in like 98, I attended talks when these people were ridiculed, like in public, for being such. It was common parlance that it was the government was at the time run by a gay mafia, because I think 3 members of the cabinet were gay. So I do very much see this as being, there is a reason why this type of story had to be told. I'm glad to say I think that we're moving away from the necessity for this to be told, but of course you always have to protect the things that you think that you've won in terms of a tolerant society, because it's not always guaranteed that you're already rowing in the same direction.
Okay. All right, that's it. And let's see. So, Matt, now for some reason my printer has decided it just says please wait, but it's clicking like crazy. And on this microphone, it's coming out really loud, I'm sure.
It's actually not that bad. Well.
Oh, good. Okay, well. Let's see, Matt, I don't have you again, so it's been nice knowing you, bud.
Ah, well, I appreciate it, but I'm off to greener pastures.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. I'm sure that I've got nothing for season 5, so keep your eye out for season 6. And we'll see what we have. But, okay. James, anything else you want to say?
Is that how you want to end it?
I guess. Is nothing else to say? We're done.
No, I think we
tore this episode apart pretty well.
Yes. Speaking of things that would get torn apart really well.
Caught in an endless time loop.
We could have been trapped here for hours, days, maybe years.
Unable to remember the past.
How did it happen? How did we get there?
A starship collision lies dead ahead.
We have to get out of here now.
Can the crew escape their own destiny?
Casualty reports coming in from all over the ship.
Or will time tick towards their final hour?
All hands abandon ship!
On Star Trek The Next Generation.
Join us next week as we review episode 18 of season 5, and that would be Cause and Effect. Get it?
I love what you did there, Lou.
You saw it. You heard it, didn't you? You heard it. So, this ought to be an interesting episode to get into. And then this ought to be an episode to get into. And this ought to be a really good episode to get into. Right?
Yes.
He didn't quite get what I got there, but anyway.
Starting 453.52.1.
453.52.1. The Typhoon Expanse. Is there such an expanse, James?
No. What?
Well,
I mean, what are you going to ask next? Is whether there's an actual USS Bozeman being piloted by Frasier or something?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Well, if there's not, I'm quitting the show.
Yeah. That poor guy. What happens to him? That's terrible. Okay, then.
I would have paid good money to see that captain carry on. By the way, that should have been the next. That should have been Discovery, right?
You know, if that was some television shows, that's what would have happened. You know, now we have to. It's like Family, right after Best of Both Worlds. You know, now we're after repercussions of having to deal with him and ease him into the 24th century. We'll talk about that again next week. Who do we have on? I think we have Blair, don't we? Yeah. So we should have Blair on for that one. So, everyone, take care, and good night.
Good night.
Good night.
All right.